This is part one of a two-part podcast.
Put Paul's brain on your plot. Do you have a hunk of land but don't know where to start? Do you have a world-changing permaculture idea and you need some feedback? Do you feel like the guy in overalls may inexplicably hold the keys to all your wildest permaculture and homesteading dreams? Well, you're probably wrong. But if you want to give it a go anyway, you can hire Paul for a consultation. He will be all yours for a whole entire hour. Schedule your Paulversation today at permies.com/consult. permies.com/consult.
Countdown has stopped to say that, you know, and but I don't know if we're live yet. Are we live, Andreas? Is it happening? Is it going?
Yes, we're live. Full.
Oh, okay. It's the buttons and stuff I see still seem to be saying that it's not going yet. It's got a button there to go live, and then yeah, all right. So if you guys could type in the chatty chat so I know you can hear me, that would be handy. But okay, so today we're doing a consult with Bonnie, and I've got a bunch of pictures that I've been looking at. But Bonnie, let's start with, where are you? Is this your house?
This is my house. That thing, that square thing in the drawing. Yeah, that's my house. Okay. It's 798 square feet. I moved from a much bigger house, two-story house, 2 years ago that I had lived in for 20 years in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And now I live in Corrales, which is like 15 minutes away. And the house that I previously lived in, I didn't know it, but everything I planted grew. So, like, it used to be a cow pasture. But I didn't realize this, that it was the soil. I thought it was me that was was able to grow. So I thought I had a green thumb. And everything I've planted since I've moved, pretty much even a desert willow has died. I do have one desert willow that, and lavender, which wouldn't grow at my old house, but I had like 20 trees over there. I had rose bushes. So I'm in a desert, literally and figuratively in my new house.
Okay. All right. So it's a small house
mm-hmm.
on a small plot.
Yes.
Okay. And it looks like the person who lived in the house before decorated dominantly with gravel. Like, wow, gravel is the best.
Yeah. And I hate gravel.
On top of that, I'd be a little concerned because it's possible that something tried to grow up through the gravel and the previous owner used chemicals to say, no one grows up through the gravel.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm looking at these pictures. Do you get like little growies having a, you know, trying to grow?
Oh yeah, so if you look at, there's like a line and then there's dirt. So the dirt was grass. They did plant grass. And when I moved in, I tried to water it, but the weeds, like I was watering the weeds. So, yes, it became overgrown. That's why I was sending you the goats, because I hired 75 goats in one day and they came and, ate everything, on the field. And so that's pretty much managed. Since then, I haven't watered, except for those two trees that died where you see the weeds, like brown.
Yeah.
That was two trees that I planted. So the weeds grew there. But, yeah, I had a ton of weeds. I should have taken pictures, but I didn't of the weeds.
First, let's talk about those weeds a little bit.
Okay.
They were not universally grasses. Is that correct? Okay.
That's correct.
So that's good. That's actually really good. Having non-grass weeds be very happy is very good. We can work with that. It's okay. When you can only get grasses to grow that it's like, uh-oh, we're in trouble. But, okay, so we've got a great start. Now, what is your annual precip? Do you know?
I don't. I could look it up really quick if you want.
That would be good. Go ahead and give that a quick look up. So it's, okay. And then the next question that I have for you, so now you have to think two thoughts at the same time. The water that you have available to irrigate with, it's city water. Is that right?
No, I have a well. So.
Ooh, okay. Okay, good, good. And the amount of water that comes out of your well, is it a lot? Is there any kind of restriction on it? You can use unlimited well water. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, but it's not a farm well. I mean, it's not a well that's specifically built for a big farm. So just a small well.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, you got a small lot. It's not like we need some 8-inch pipe to carry water onto your small lot here.
No, but, we don't. Yeah.
But it'll fill a garden hose just great.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. This is amazing progress already. Okay.
That's great. Our average annual precipitation is 10 inches.
Okay. All right. That's not too bad. It's not very good, but it's not too bad. Looking at the pictures, I feel like you have a little bit of wind. Is that fair?
A lot of wind.
A lot of wind. Okay. All right. Now, it does look like your dirt patch, and in your drawing, it's called the dirt lot.
Yes.
And, there's even something about a chicken coop over there. Okay, and I see the chicken coop.
Yes.
All right. It looks like the dirt lot used to be a place where people would park rigs of some kind. The whole of everything looks so flat that it looks like, I don't know. It was just a giant parking lot before. I mean, really, that's kind of where you're at. I mean, I'm trying to look at the pictures to see but you had a couple, you mentioned something about trees which died.
Yeah, I do have one. I have two trees. So I have a big tree in the back of the dirt lot. That's a volunteer. It's right on the property line. It's a elm tree.
Mm-hmm.
And then I planted a desert willow right behind the house.
Okay.
And it is still alive, at least, was when winter set in.
Do you know that, like, if you were to go out to the place that's called Dirt Lot?
Yeah.
And if you were to dig a hole, maybe a foot wide and a foot deep, do you know what you're going to find there? Like
clay.
Oh, clay. Well, that's.
Well, actually, so if you look at the top left quadrant of the dirt lot was the leach field with the old septic tanks. So. I was told that, you know, when something was a leach field in the past, it should be pretty fertile.
Okay. Now, there were words suggesting past and history suggesting that you're now on city sewage or something.
No, I'm on septic, but the septic tank was 20 years old and had to be moved. It was saturated.
Okay. So,
it's a new septic, but it's not city.
Okay. Good to know. So, very important wherever it is, let's not build anything on top of your drain field. Just as a general rule of thumb.
Yes.
Yeah. Always. I have to point that out now because of the people in the past that apparently get ideas about it. I think I've shared a story in the past about somebody who asked me and I said, don't do that. Somebody else overheard it and also said, don't do that. And then that person thought I was a fool And so then took it up with the mighty, the glorious, the amazing Sepp Holzer. His answer was, I give your question an F. Next question. So wouldn't even answer the question. Just, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. Always good to point that out, but all right, moving on.
So to the right of the dirt lot is the new leach field.
So, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. A ways away from the house.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Interesting. Very interesting. Okay. Yeah. So let's, I want to spitball some ideas here. Naturally, I kind of feel like the solution for nearly everything is hugel culture. In this particular lot, and first of all, you've got that dead tree, which is begging to be turned into hugel culture.
Okay.
I'm kind of thinking like, okay, your lot is so very, very flat that if I'm going to build a hugel culture, then I'm going to get someplace. I'm going to start laying down the wood. In fact, I'm going to grab this image, copy, and I'm going to email this to Andreas, and hopefully he'll get it to appear on the screen. And I'm going to go back to your thing. All right. So I think that in order to be able to build hugel culture, you got to kind of map out some stuff about where your paths might be in between hugel culture stuff. And then you dig down where the paths are, which will be clay, and then you'll dump that material onto the wood where the hugel culture is going to exist. And that what'll end up happening is that you'll have these awesome hugel cultures, but you'll have these paths that'll be lower than the overall ground level in the area, which means that when it rains, my guess is that while it doesn't rain very much there, a lot of your precip comes all at once.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yes.
There's the image. It's looking very tiny. And here's our zoomy action. So on this image, you can kind of see the green is supposed to be kind of a lawn. And for you, there is no green. It's just dirt. But at least it kind of gives you an idea of where the flat is. And then you're going to lay some wood down where you want your hugel culture to end up. And then you're going to dig down where your path is going to be and start putting that dirt on top of the woody bits. Then once you can't see the woody bits, then you're going to add more woody bits. Then you're going to bury that until you can't see those woody bits, et cetera. And that's how you're going to make a hugel culture. So you end up with something that's a total of 7 feet tall, but your path went down about 3 feet, and then your hugel culture went up about 4 feet. So your paths are going to be about 3 feet deep. Now, of course, don't do anything with any of this anywhere near your drain field. So it's great that you already know where your drain field is. Now, a wonderful thing that's going to happen out of all of this is that if you do oodles of it, the wind is going to have a tough time getting down in between the hoogles, which means that your very light amount of precipitation is going to stick around a fair bit. Now, what this is going to mean is that, whereas if you just did a flat garden, your garden would drown whenever it would rain or whenever you would irrigate it, and it would be very difficult to get anything to grow because there's so much clay. But with the hugel culture, then all that same water is going to fill up your paths. And so, you're going to want to get, those muck boots, you know, because sometimes you're going to wade out to your paths and they may eventually turn into something resembling mosquito pits.
Oh, no.
And it's like, there's possible ways of mitigating that. And there's lots to talk about down that road. But for the moment, let's just, you know, assume the phrase, this just really isn't happening to me. And then we'll ignore it and we'll deal with it some other day. In the meantime, okay, everything higher than where the water is puddling is not puddling. And so it'll have sufficient drainage and your growies will be happy. The thing that I'm curious about is like how much. Now, of course, if you get only 10 inches of precip and maybe you get 4 inches all in one day, and then the 4 inches will be absorbed by your hoogles up above, and a little bit of it might leak out into the paths, and the paths, of course, are just filling up. That might be a good 4 to 6 inches deep until it eventually soaks into the clay below, in which case it'll only be 3 inches of splashy splashy. And it's like, that'll be possibly tolerable considering all the other benefits that you get. It's also plausible that someday you'll make yourself a fun little pond somewhere that'll be the low spot. And the pond will dry out in a month or two, but whenever it rains, your paths will take all of that water that it accumulated and put it in your silly little pond. And maybe you'll, there's more comedy down that road. But the key is that what you have now is a clay patch and it looks very sad. Plus, you know, I'm talking about you're going to build these things 7 feet tall, and it's possible you'll even want to go taller than that for reasons. Part of the reason is that as I'm looking at one of these pictures, several of these pictures, I can see the neighborhood.
Yes.
And it's like, I don't think that you're like setting up a picnic table out in your dirt patch and sitting there with a cup of tea so you can get a real good look at the neighborhood. Like, when it comes to aesthetics and art and beauty, I suspect that you will enjoy sitting on a picnic table gazing at a hoogle culture full of growies instead of staring at the buildings in your neighborhood.
Yes. It's just,
okay, well, good. I'm glad we had this chat. We're making progress.
Okay.
So I would say that if the hoogles are only 4 feet taller than the ground level right there, I might feel a little bit like, at least on the far edges of where I do this, I might go for something more than 4 feet just to kind of, you know, enhance the view a little.
Okay.
Up to you. I mean, there's a couple of important bits. One is that if you're out there with a shovel doing this, your hoogle culture ends up being less than 7 feet tall, just mysteriously. However, if you rent an excavator for a day, which might only be like $300, then suddenly all your hoogles are like 14 feet tall.
Wow.
How did that happen? And part of it is because you'll get done building your hoogles and you'll say like, I still have 4 more hours that I've paid for this thing. And it's like, maybe I'll make them even bigger. Yeah. And then boom, baby, they're even taller and bigger. At least the ones on the outside sides. You make them even more and more beautiful.
Like probably, kind of like a almost a fence. I don't know.
Yeah. Yes. Almost like a fence.
Okay.
Now, your property looks brutally flat.
Brutally.
Like there is no slope. If there's any slope, it's because you were out there with a shovel and made a slope. And so trying to design all of this in such a way to get the cold air to go away isn't going to do much for you. Now, which is another excellent question. My guess is that you do get frost there. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. It's very cold right now. It's 36 degrees. Well, not cold compared to where you are, but.
Yeah.
We've been in the 20s at night.
Okay. Okay. What is the coldest it has ever been there in the last 10 years?
Oh, it has gotten below zero.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
Good to know.
Maybe just below zero.
Okay, and that's Fahrenheit, right?
Yes, we're talking Fahrenheit.
Okay, good. Good to know. So we should plan on frosts every year.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we usually have a late frost every year in May, or April or May.
Okay.
So that kills trees or fruit trees.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, as frosts are known to be deadly to all kinds of growies. All right.
Yeah.
So, I'm thinking that what I would like to have you do is around the perimeter of your property to make as tall of a hugel culture as you are comfortable making. And I think that if you were to rent an excavator for a day, those hugel cultures will be even taller than if you did not. Then, internally, when you make a hugel culture that is closer to your house, it's like between your house and the outermost hugel culture. That one might end up being just 7 feet tall.
How far away from the house?
Oh, well, I think that when I look at your house, I suspect it has a cement foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I think that you want to be able to walk between your house and the nearest hugel culture. I would have to say that you would probably want your nearest hugel culture to your house to not be closer than 8 feet.
Okay.
All right. Now, at the same time, we're looking at a fairly urban lot, a large urban lot. I'm going to guess that this is a third of an acre. How close am I?
It's a half an acre.
Half an acre. Okay.
Yeah.
So, very nice. Congratulations on getting a half an acre, in what looks like a relatively urban environment. And it looks like, okay, there, I see some chain link fence stuff, and that's probably kind of a parking lot thing there. I can even see a bit of a vehicle. Oh, there's a vehicle right there. There's a rig. And, if I knew more about cars, I would know what that symbol was. Is that a Mazda? Okay. So, all right. So that's where the cars go. I love the idea that you're going to have so many hugel cultures growing here and the tallest ones to the outside that, you're going to basically delete a lot of the local buildings and you're going to make a permaculture paradise.
Nice.
Okay. That's where I'm starting with all of this conversation. Okay. Jeff T is asking, where is she going to get logs?
Thank you, Jeff T.
And it's like, well, there's that dead tree back there. I thought that's where we were going to get the logs.
Yeah, but it's more like a twig.
Oh. Okay. I was thinking like once we hack it up but you're thinking like, you know, because the other thing is that the hugel culture design that I just laid out is like the woody bits are only going to go in the top half and the top half is narrower than the bottom half. And so, yeah, so excellent picture right there. So it kind of turns out to be that those logs are going to go a long ways.
Okay.
You know, so only a third of the wood per hugel culture is going to be used. Because if we were building this from the ground up, then we would use three times as much wood. So, That's what I was thinking was our primary thing, but if nothing else, so you've got like a half acre, I would say it's entirely plausible that you're going to pick a place to be your first half of your garden. And you're going to, and this year you'll do half a garden, and then in a year or two you will do the other half. And so in which case, if you do just half a garden and you build all the hookah cultures, you'll use the wood from that, and that might turn out to be enough. If it's not enough, I'm not quite sure what you're going to need to do for more. Definitely never put wood chips inside of a hookah culture.
Okay.
I see some stuff that looks like wood chips.
Yeah.
I wish to universally discourage people from using wood chips ever for anything.
Okay.
Have you ever wondered whether a particular book was really good or just so-so, and if you could trust the reviews online? When it comes to books related to permaculture, Permies has a large list of reviews for over 100 books. Perhaps you're considering a book for yourself or a friend, or you're just curious about what's out there. Stop by permies.com/book and take a look at the book review grid and read some honest reviews, and hopefully you'll find the next book to add to your collection.
I've got a bunch of different reasons. I mean, if you have a wood shop, which it looks like you don't, then it's like, oh, well, maybe some of the sawdust could be used for a mulch, provided that you don't use any glues in the stuff that has the sawdust, but you don't have a wood shop. And then the next thing is like, well, maybe you have a sawmill of your own, and it's like if you know that the wood came from a place that doesn't have persistent herbicides, then you could do that. You could use some of the wood chips that come from your sawmill, but you don't have a sawmill. And so then it's like, well, where are you getting the wood chips? And it's like, well, I'll tell you. And it goes like this. There's a property two blocks away, and they hose their property down with persistent herbicides, which kills everything that's not a grass. And then the tree that was growing there died for no reason. I'm going to say this, for no reason. And it turns out that the tree is not a type of grass. So the tree took up that poison and died from the poison. And now the tree is loaded with a persistent herbicide. And so then if you take those wood chips and put them on your horticultural projects, the herbicide is still active and it will kill your growies. So there's a time and a place where you could import wood chips, but it's so complicated and it's such a long story and there's so much to talk about. Better to just like, you know what, let's just say no to wood chips. And instead, we're going to do hookah culture. We're going to do other mulches. We're going to, you know, there's a whole, all right. I think what would be good for you to do is to take your drawing and you need to add onto your drawing where the drain field is, because you're going to not dig there and you're not going to put a hookah culture there.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, so not there.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, where am I going to build my first hookah? So you kind of need to draw a map. And I think an important thing to do is when you draw on this about where your hookahs are going to be, if you're going to go with my 7-foot theory, then each hookah culture is going to be 7 feet wide and 7 feet tall. And I think that the paths between the hookahs need to be about 6 to 8 feet wide. It would be delightful if your hookah culture beds were not just a bunch of straight lines, but that's artistic choice and you are the artisan, so you choose. if you're going to follow my advice to do something much taller along the perimeter of your property, then you got to decide how much taller, and then you're going to start drawing that. Now, keep in mind that on the outside side of your property, you're going to want to be able to have a nice wide path back there for you to be able to walk. And you don't want to dig too close to the fence, because then the fence might decide to leave where it is and come and visit you for a tea party. And you don't want that. You want the fence to stay exactly where it is for a buffet of reasons. So I would say be careful that you don't dig too close to the fence. And don't build any hugelkultur too close to the fence. You want a nice broad gap there.
Okay.
All right. So, if you choose to rent an excavator, then like, why don't you plan on your exterior hugelkultur as being something on the order of 12 feet tall? And maybe that's going to be 7 feet high and 5 feet low. Maybe. I'm just making this up. But you're going to need to map out where that's going to be. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're going to want to spend some time drawing all of this and coming up with a plan for how you want to do it.
Okay.
It is possible that you'll just make a contiguous hugelkultur along your perimeter with the exception of your drain field. I think you'd probably want to have a gap every 40 feet or so, just so that it's easier to get around to the other side. And then another thing you might do is that when you do this, you might want to have overlapping hugels like this. Can you see what I'm – look at my gesture that I'm making. Mm-hmm. So that way, rather than having a gap like this, you might have a gap like this. So there's a gap between my hands that you can't see. Ooh, look at that. 3D. Da, 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 da,
da, da, da, da. Okay.
Do you kind of see that gap? That way, if my face is a building that's in the neighborhood that you don't want to look at, see how this works? Mm-hmm. Ta-da! So you've deleted the building. Whereas if there's a gap, it's like, hello, I'm still here. So, can still walk between the two in order to be able to go and get your crops from the other side and garden that other side.
Okay.
Now, a really fun thing about this is that by doing hugelkultur the way I've described, is that you're going to go from having a half acre of very sad land where it's very difficult to grow anything to sort of having almost an acre of land that you can grow on that's packed into your half acre.
Ooh.
Does that make sense? You're going to have twice as much growing space.
Okay.
Because you got this now, right? This is your hugelkultur, and it used to be like this. But on that land, you've placed this. So it has twice as much growing space as before. Ta-da!
Ta-da!
So much more gardening space. All right. Now, you have not... So usually when I do this, I call this the, let's crush your dreams consultation.
Yes.
And... you'll notice that I went ahead and gave you advice, even though you never asked me a single question or anything like that. I just jumped right in and started saying hugelkultur, hugelkultur, hugelkultur. Now, okay. So I read your mind or something like that.
You did.
But, okay. Let's see what thoughts you have so far. Then I can properly crush your dreams.
Okay. Well... So the dirt lot I had thought to make like a wild field, you know, rewilding, flowers, grass, you know, just leave it alone. Like it'll just grow on its own and I never have to do anything ever again. with that. And I was going to put cardboard. I was going to do cardboard mulch, bring in a bunch of manure and mulch and put it on top of the cardboard and then plant. It would still be flat. So.
And it would still drown whenever it rained because it's so much clay. And I want to talk about how I do not like ever using cardboard or newspaper in horticultural endeavors.
Okay.
But to be fair to you, Sepp Holter, Jeff Lawton, and Bill Mollison all think it's lovely and delightful to use cardboard and newspaper in horticultural endeavors.
Right.
Now, there is a giant thread at permies.com which talks about this topic. And there is some amazing research on why you should never use cardboard and newspaper. There's some very toxic stuff going on there.
Okay.
And I like the idea of moving away from toxicity. And so
I can't
the other thing the other thing is that it's like you're going to lay down your cardboard in order to smother the weeds that are there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the clay has already beat you to the punch. Things look pretty smothered already. You brought in a bunch of goats, and the goats left behind some fertilizer packets.
They did.
Yeah, and so that's going to try to turn your clay into something resembling soil, but something which hasn't shown up in these pictures. So far, what I see in the pictures is just a big lot of sad death. Maybe those weed patches get a little greener in the non-dormant season.
No.
No, they don't get greener?
I haven't been watering, so the weeds aren't even growing.
Okay. All right. Well, and I'd like to get you to the point that you don't have to water. That 10 inches of precipitation will be plenty. Part of what we're going to try to do is like we're working with clay and wood. And what we need is soil on wood. So we're going to have to build the soil for a bit to get it to the point that you don't have to irrigate anymore. So it's going to be a few years. And so what we need is when we build a hugel culture and we get it all planted with stuff, I need you to irrigate it to keep it green and lush as long as you can. Because as long as it's green and lush, it's building soil. But it is going to be dominantly clay on wood. And so until we can get that clay transformed into a type of soil.
So I had a question. I lost it.
Okay, good. Put a pin in your question whenever you remember it, because now I want to make whiny sounds about your manure plans.
Okay.
All right. The manure, is it from animals that will be sold as organic, like whatever their thing is, it's organic.
Grass, you mean like grass-fed animals or?
More than grass-fed, organic. It could be grass-fed, but basically those persistent herbicides, the cow eats it and poops out manure with persistent herbicides. Then you go and you put that on your growies and all your growies die.
Right.
And which seems to be the opposite of what you're shooting for here. And so, I kind of feel like, you know, what I want to encourage everybody to do is to grow their own manures. And so, you know, what can you grow there that just does so great that you don't care about that you can go and cut it all down and then go and lay that on your stuff instead of manure? So, for example, something you could try on your clay would be like field peas. Probably won't do good. You might try buckwheat, but I'm not yet. The thing is that you want to probably try a dozen different things to find out what does well on your flat clay in your area. And then once it grows up, you're going to go and hack it all down, and that's going to be your mulch that you're going to lay down on your hugel cultures. Or if you're building a hugel culture, it's going to go inside of the hugels in a little patch or a little blob somewhere, a little blotch.
Okay.
So, you're right. Your instinct is correct, because looking at this, it looks like what you have right now is dirt. And in order to convert dirt into soil, you need to work in some organic matter, and traditionally that's manures. But traditionally, like 100 years ago, you could do that, and it didn't contain a bunch of persistent herbicides, so it always worked. Now, like 98% of the time, it contains persistent herbicides, so it's a universal fail. And so it's kind of like, yeah. So my guess is, and the other thing that gets even more challenging is you can go to a source of manure, and at that source, this person is like desperately wanting to get rid of Manure Mountain. If only they can find some garden fool who will take it. And then you'll show up and you'll say, well, I'll take all of it, provided that it doesn't contain any persistent herbicides. And so the farmer is probably going to say, like, well, here's what the farmer thinks. If I tell them the truth that it contains persistent herbicides, they won't take it. And if I lie to them, they'll take it. All their garden will die, but that's their problem, not my problem.
Right.
And so now we've gotten into this ethics conversation with this farmer, and I don't know about you, but I can't tell the difference between when the farmer is lying and when they're telling the truth. On the other hand, a thing that we've done several times, which could go like this: well, I am very concerned. I'm going to put all this manure on my lawn, and I'm very concerned about bringing in weed seeds. How do I know this manure doesn't just contain a billion weed seeds? And now you're going to probably get the exact information that you need. Either the farmer's going to say, like, oh, well, there's persistent herbicides in there, so there's all of the weeds are dead. They've all been killed. Okay. Or the farmer's going to say, like, ah, well, I was really hoping to get rid of this, but it's loaded with weed seeds because we don't use any herbs. So now you might find that you got the answer you looked for. So that's a possible strategy. All right. So here I am, thoroughly crushing all your dreams. What other ridiculous things do you want to suggest that I could crush?
I just wanted to say I came with my dreams crushed, so because I have no idea what to do about this. But I do want to say I do have chicken manure. I don't know if that's any good, because the chicken coop used to have chickens. The manure is like 2 years old. I haven't cleaned it out. I could spread it all over.
Well, let's talk about that for a sec. Let me crush those dreams as well.
Okay, great.
So, do you know if what the chickens were fed? Do you know if it was organic?
Nope.
Don't know. All right. Well, chances are it was not organic. And now persistent herbicides are a broadleaf herbicide, which means it'll kill everything but grass. Mm-hmm. And, chances are those chickens were fed grain, and grain grows on grass.
Right.
And a lot of times when growing grass and you're not restricted by organic stuff, you tend to use persistent herbicides. So that way you're growing just the grain and not other things. So, chances are, and the next part of it is the half-life of the persistent herbicide is 7 to 11 years.
Mm.
So you could roll those dice and see, but I know I don't want to. Now, on the other hand, you could go and plant a bunch of stuff in there just for giggles. And then if you plant, like peas are very popular to try. And so if you plant peas and they're sad, well, that kind of confirmed that. On the other hand, if the peas grow, the problem is that it's not like you have a patch next to it that's a bunch of organic manure to see whether the peas did better on the organic manure than on the old chicken manure in that old chicken coop. So, I don't know. This is a kind of a complicated thing. But, you know, if you tried to grow stuff there and the peas either came out stunted or they wouldn't grow at all, I think you've got an answer. It's terrible. On the other hand, it's possible that the peas will grow and they are stunted, but you don't know that they're stunted and they're actually thriving on the manure while simultaneously being stunted by the poisons. It's tough to tell. Then you probably have this thought of like, can't you take a sample of it and send it off to a laboratory where they, you know, say, and it's like, well, it's kind of complicated because you're looking for parts per million, which is a difficult test. And then the people who made the parts per million stuff, it finally got banned because it's such a problem. And then they came out with a new product that's better. And the way that it's better is that it's effective at parts per billion. It's even harder to detect. And because it's harder to detect, it ends up going to these tests. And the tests come back and it's like, well, we couldn't find any. And it's like, there you go. See, we're all good. We're all happy here. And so it's a more elusive kind of a poison.
Wow.
Ta-da. So, getting a test like that is difficult. So,
this podcast is continued in part 2.
In a world on the brink of social collapse, one website stands above the rest to fight back the zombie horde of corporate trolls. Permies.com. Take back control of your destiny and protect your loved ones from the toxic gick coming at you from all directions. Strap on your overalls and start building that bunker of abundance with the good vibes and friendly, helpful insight found at Permies.com.